Hello, and welcome to the Love Mia Vita podcast. I'm Jerry DiPiano, CEO of FemPharma. Thank you for joining me as we discuss all things women's health and wellness. Please note that this information is simply that. It's information to help you to think through your decisions. Please consult your medical practitioner to discuss your personal situation. Thank you. Hi, Catherine. Welcome back to our podcast, the Love Mia Vita podcast. It's so great to see you.
Great to see you, Jerry.
So for those of you that aren't familiar with Dr. Sharif, Catherine Sharif is a regular guest and my co-host on the Love Mia Vita podcast. And Catherine is a professor of medicine at Thomas Jefferson University. But Catherine, perhaps for those that haven't already met you, you can share a bit of your background.
Sure. So I'm an internist and I've been in practice for 30 years. 30 years ago, I was very lucky to join a Center for Women's Health that was established at the Medical College of Pennsylvania, which was the first medical school for women in the world. It was established in 1850 by Quakers in Philadelphia for women because medical schools would not admit women. So it has a wonderful history, and I'm very lucky to have started off there. And here is my practice 30 years later. We're doing great, and we're at Thomas Jefferson University.
Well, congratulations to all the women who have had the privilege of having you as a professor and a physician, because we know that you understand more broadly some of the issues that disproportionately affect women. So we are so excited to have you again on the Love Mia Vita podcast. Today, we're going to have a conversation about iron deficiency without anemia. And to be honest with you, even though I've been involved in women's health research for over 25 years, I did not know that that was an issue, but it is a very prevalent issue. And today, I believe you have a presentation that you're going to share with those of you that are viewing it. But for those of you that are listening, you'll still gain a lot of knowledge from this. And something that we need to pay attention to, I know I will, because some of the symptoms that are described when you do have iron deficiency without anemia could resemble things like perimenopause or menopause. We talk about brain fog and depression and other cognitive issues that fatigue, pain. So it could be confusing, but I think you're going to illuminate this for us today.
Yes, I'm so glad to have the chance to talk about this because I think it affects so many women and that it is very underdiagnosed. And it may, if you have fatigue and can't figure out what's going on, it may shed some light on this. So would you like me to share my screen?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. So iron deficiency without anemia. As physicians, we're used to looking at a complete blood count. And if your hemoglobin is normal, we don't think about iron deficiency. We only think if your hemoglobin is low. Most women are between 11.5 and 12 for a hemoglobin. And hemoglobin, as you know, is the protein that lives in the red blood cells, and it carries oxygen everywhere the red blood cells go. A red blood cell cannot carry oxygen if you don't have a hemoglobin molecule in there to carry the oxygen. So, but I think that there's a lot more iron deficiency out there than we give it credit for, and that this iron deficiency is not causing anemia. And so I'd like to talk about that more. So the definition of low iron without anemia or iron deficiency without anemia is that your ferritin is low. Ferritin is the iron storage protein in your blood. And it is often used to measure iron status because it can be more accurate than an actual iron level. So an iron level can reflect what you've eaten or what you haven't eaten that day. But ferritin tells us what your storage is. And we think that ferritin should be at least 35 nanograms per deciliter. And some clinicians say that's just too low. It should be 50 or even 70. What we do know is that too much iron is dangerous to the body. It accelerates inflammation and aging. So the definition is low iron and the hemoglobin is normal. So if you have a normal complete blood count, I wouldn't know you were iron deficient unless I measured your ferritin or your iron. Okay, so I routinely measure ferritin. So statistics about iron deficiency. We think that at least 50% of American women ages 18 to 50 have some form of iron deficiency with or without anemia. But even without anemia, as you mentioned, Jerry, you can have side effects like fatigue, cognitive effects, which we often describe as brain fog, where you can't focus or you just don't seem sharp. And there can also be mood effects. There are many other effects. We forget that other tissues need iron, including our white blood cells. So if you're iron deficient, your immune system is also affected.
I guess when I think about some of the mood effects, are we talking about things like depression, anxiety? What are
Yes.
some of the mood effects?
Depression or anxiety. And you know how much depression and anxiety we have in our culture. And depression and anxiety have very many different causes. Here's one thing one more thing that we can address when we're looking for causes. So, what's the importance of iron? Well, as I mentioned, it's critical to red blood cells and white blood cells, and it carries oxygen in the protein in the molecule called hemoglobin, which is sitting in the red blood cells. You also need iron to build neurotransmitters in your brain, like dopamine, serotonin, and norepinephrine. And we know that the three of them influence mood, focus, mental clarity, and that the lack of iron can give you brain fog, even without anemia. Also, iron helps carry and use oxygen in your muscles and tissues. So low levels can cause fatigue, again, even if you are not anemic. So you need it for energy and endurance. You also need it for immune support, as I said. Low levels can make you more vulnerable to infections and slow healing because the immune system creates healing. The iron also helps your body convert T4 to T3. So T3 is the active thyroid hormone. So our thyroid produces T4, which is thyroxine, and we need iron to then convert that T4 to T3, which is active in what's going around in the body. So you need it for thyroid function. And you can imagine if you are not making active thyroid hormone, or that is T3, you will be hypothyroid and fatigued. And finally, you need it for pregnancy and fertility. Iron supports the baby's development, and anemia in pregnancy is very common. And it is one of the major causes for maternal mortality in the world. Women are so have such low iron because of malnutrition, and they may also they're frequently anemic. Then they give birth and they bleed some more. Then their blood pressure drops and then they crash. And so it's a significant cause of death in childbirth.
I'm sure we're going to discuss this, but I'm imagining too that this issue of low ferritin levels can wax and wane depending upon weight gain or weight loss and through the various transitions, especially for women through their reproductive life.
Yes, ferritin can go up and down. It doesn't just depend on what you eat. Another thing which can confuse the issue is that ferritin isn't just doesn't just it doesn't reflect the iron status, but Ferritin can also reflect inflammation. So let's say that you have a lot of inflammation in your diet because the type of foods you eat, processed foods, create inflammation. Ferritin can go up. Let's say you have a lot of pain in your knees, you have osteoarthritis or an autoimmune disease. All that inflammation can make ferritin go up because it's a marker for inflammation. So your doctor has to sort through, is your ferritin high because of inflammation, but maybe it's really low because you don't have enough iron. And so they can figure that out with blood tests. When you have menstrual periods, obviously you bleed, you lose iron, which is in the hemoglobin molecule in your red blood cells. And so it makes sense for your ferritin to be a little bit low. If you bleed heavily, then it's going to be very low. If you're pregnant, your iron requirements are going to increase. So it's really important to get to be taking iron during the pregnancy and afterwards. And then, if you don't have periods at all, you shouldn't be on iron because iron can cause inflammation and we don't want too much iron in the body.
Thank you.
So, some causes of iron deficiency. Well, the most obvious one is blood loss. And when we think of blood loss in women, we think of menstrual periods. And so, if you have low iron, is it because you have heavy menstrual periods or is there something else going on? What you don't want to do is assume that everything is due to heavy periods and skip and maybe miss something that someone has an ulcer in their stomach or they have hemorrhoids that are bleeding or they're bleeding somewhere in the GI tract, like in the colon. That's one cause of blood loss. Causes of iron deficiency include blood loss, either through periods or through the GI tract. Examples of the GI tract are stomach, colon, hemorrhoids. For example, you have an ulcer, or you have diverticulosis, or you have a benign polyp, or you have colon cancer. And then menstrual periods. Not everybody has heavy menstrual periods. And just an editorial remark here, Jerry, which is, how is it that in 2025, we do not have a very good way of assessing what a heavy menstrual period is? We don't really quantify it. So I'll say to people, for example, okay, so your periods are regular or your periods are heavy. When you say you have a heavy period, how many tampons do you use or pads? You say change them 4 times a day. Are they soaked or they're not quite soaked? And on the heaviest day, what does it look like? And then sometimes people use these gigantic overnight pads that are like diapers and they soak them. And we are all over the place. And we should, in this day and age, we should be able to quantify the blood loss every month.
Well, then there are those women that are on continuous birth control, so they're not having a period.
Yes, that's right. And some of the birth control pills have iron in them. The way that you would know this, it says the name of the pill at the brand name, and then it says FE, right? Like Junel FE. And you can't just be handing out iron left and right. Iron is a pro-oxidant, pro-inflammatory. It accelerates aging and coronary artery disease if you have too much. And for women and girls who may be bleeding too much at very heavy periods, they go on the birth control pill, which decreases it really controls the amount of bleeding, makes it lighter, then they shouldn't be on iron. So I don't think we, in general, we do not have a very sophisticated understanding of iron.
Capitalizing on that, I also think about women who are on IUDs.
Yes.
So there are so many unanswered questions when it comes to women's health care throughout the reproductive life cycle. And when I say that, I mean it is puberty, It's perimenopause and it's postmenopause. We just don't have the, we don't have all the answers. So it's important to have these levels measured, I would imagine.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing is, it affects your mood, your neurotransmitters, your energy, your immune system, and there's no guidelines that iron or ferritin should even be measured. It's only been treated as important in the context of your anemic, maybe it's iron deficiency, but it's so much more than that, which is why I am so happy to be here today to talk about this. Now, besides losing blood, which could give you iron deficiency, it's also possible that you don't have it in your diet. So, one is you don't have enough fruits and vegetables, or you don't have to be a meat eater. And you know how I feel about eating lots of meat. So that is not a reason. You could still get iron from your food with fruits and vegetables without eating meat. But meat is a great source of iron. So if you don't have a great diet, if you're eating a lot of ultra-processed foods and not fruits and vegetables and some meat, if you're an e meat eater, or beans, if you're not a meat eater, you can have a dietary deficiency. It's relatively easy. It's not that easy to absorb iron, so it's easy to become iron deficient.
You know, I was reading some studies and they looked at omnivores, which means you eat everything. And then they were looking at those that are meat eaters, the vegetarians, right? And the vegetarian may have dairy and they may have eggs, so they're not a vegan. Vegan will not eat any dairy or any eggs. And they looked at where you see the deficiencies and can you guess where it was? I know you can. Who had the greatest deficiency?
The vegans, or not, they didn't include they did include the vegans.
They
Yeah.
did.
So they
Yes.
did they have the greatest deficiency?
They did.
Yeah.
I knew you would get the answer right.
Oh.
Of course, but it does speak to how, and again, I think we're gonna discuss this at some point. It does speak to how you can augment your diet or what you may need to do if you are a strict vegan.
Yes. The last category of causes of iron deficiency, besides bleeding or a lack of it in your diet, is malabsorption. And this is very common. Why? Because so many people are on acid blockers, like, for example, the proton pump inhibitors, which include omeprazole, pantoprazole, or other acid blockers, the H2 blockers, which are like famotidine. And when you block acid, you make it very difficult to absorb iron. So you turn off the iron production to treat heartburn or reflux, and then you don't absorb much iron. And people are on these drugs for years, and they're supposed to only be used for a few weeks or a few months. That's something that really worries me, this long-term use of acid blockers. We also know that a lot of people have celiac disease that is not diagnosed. And with celiac disease, your small intestine is irritated. That's where you're supposed to absorb so many nutrients, but it's all beat up because of a gluten allergy, and then you don't absorb iron well. And then finally, autoimmune gastritis is overlooked all the time. In autoimmune gastritis, your immune system attacks your parietal cells and produces parietal cells antibody. Parietal cells produce acid, and when you attack them, you kill them. And then if you're not producing your own acid, you're not absorbing iron. And autoimmune gastritis is tricky because we so often things are just ascribed to heavy periods. And I've seen this on many charts where a woman will have very low ferritin or iron storage, And she does not have heavy periods. But when the doctor saw her, the doctor said, it's probably her periods. No, it's not. And it ended up being autoimmune gastritis. And I don't want our listeners to panic and feel like they might have autoimmune gastritis and it's not being picked up. What you do is you work through this one by one. Are you on an acid blocker? Are your periods extremely heavy? Might you have celiac disease or gluten sensitivity? Those are some of the common causes of malabsorption. And of course, there's also bariatric surgery. And it's very hard to replace the iron after you have that kind of surgery, and you have to be on it lifelong.
What about individuals with H. pylori disease? Would you
Well,
expect that to be a problem as well?
yes. So H. pylori is the bacteria that can cause inflammation of the stomach, which is gastritis or ulcers. And when you have inflammation or ulcers, you bleed little by little. It's just a slow drip, and you can lose iron that way as well.
Thank you.
When you should get tested, at least once, if not once a year, at least once. Get your ferritin and your iron studies checked. When your doctor is doing routine blood tests, I would ask for this because it's not enough to simply be anemic, then to look for the iron, because you might have low iron and not be anemic. So remember, ferritin is the storage form of iron. You also want to check iron studies at the same time, because if your ferritin is high, because you have inflammation in your body, your iron studies may tell you, well, actually, your iron is low, and that's a falsely elevated iron. So, dietary sources of iron. Well, I like this. Whenever I read about this, they say organ meats. And I am so grateful that my mother never made us eat organ meats. And she said, I'm not eating that liver, and you're not eating it if you don't want to. So we don't need to eat organs to get the iron that we need.
My mother made us eat liver.
She did?
It did.
Ugh, to
Liver and onions.
the fresh liver and onions.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to call it foul. I've never had it, but
Foul.
foul.
It is foul.
Yeah.
For anybody listening, I hope I haven't offended you, but I really don't like it.
Yes. So dietary sources of iron. Of course, fruits and vegetables have iron in them. Eggs have iron in them. We've talked about eggs before. Eggs are good for you, and eggs are not bad food. But you would like the eggs to have been born to chickens who were adequately nourished and eating the food they're supposed to be eating, as opposed to animal products. Chickens are not big animal eaters. They're vegetarians and they like bugs. I don't know what that makes you, but they like seeds and nuts and greens and so on, and bugs. And when chickens eat food that is not natural to them, and it may be food from a animal processing place, leftover food, then the eggs aren't healthy. And so I would encourage our listeners to buy organic eggs where the chickens were fed properly. Anyway, so eggs are wonderful. And of course, meat, but I would like you to not eat more than 4 ounces at a time. Now, supplementation. My favorite iron supplementation is iron bisglycinate. And that's B bisglycinate. And so often women are prescribed iron sulfate or ferrous sulfate, ferrous being the other name for iron. Or you may see tablets in the pharmacy that say Fe, iron sulfate. Iron sulfate is hard on your stomach and it's not very well absorbed. And then doctors may tell you to take it 3 times a day. That's what I was taught when I was a medical student, which is terrible. And you will never poop again. So then people go off the iron. So I do not recommend iron sulfate. There's many forms of iron, but the one that seems to be best tolerated is iron bisglycinate. And I put down here on this slide 24 milligrams as an example, but you could go anywhere between 20 and 40 milligrams. And another important thing that we've learned in the last few years is that you do not take iron every day, because if you do, you have trouble absorbing it. And the reason is very interesting. There is a protein called hepcidin. Hepcidin is produced when the body senses that too much iron is being absorbed, and iron is bad for the body in very high, in high doses. So when you take iron every single day, your body produces hepcidin and prevents the iron from being absorbed. And the best way to take iron is every other day. And to make that easy, we just say Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So Monday's iron is absorbed on Tuesday, and then there's a break, and then you take Wednesday's iron, and so on. And you can get iron levels up very quickly with this regimen and minimize constipation, and you just take it once a day. So I would encourage you to, if you are taking iron because you've been told you had iron deficiency, and if you were told that it was due to periods, then please make sure that your iron levels are coming up. If they're not coming up, perhaps you're not on the right type of iron, or you're taking it every day. And definitely do not take it more than twice a day. If you are on a birth control pill that says FE, which means iron, did the doctor prescribe that for you because you needed iron, or it was just what was available when they wrote for it? And what you don't want is extra iron in your body. And I think that is it.
So, is there any relationship between BMI or weight and weight as it pertains to this issue? Because we know that inflammation tends to be greater in individuals with a very high BMI.
Yes.
So, would they get a false reading on the ferritin level?
Yes, that's a great point. So if I have a patient who is 30 or 50 pounds overweight, we know that, and we've talked about it here, those fat cells produce inflammatory compounds, and then the ferritin goes up. And then you might not realize that they are actually iron deficient. You wouldn't know unless you then go and check iron levels, which will be low while the ferritin is high. And then that tells you the ferritin is artificially high. And then, what we didn't talk about was iron overload. So iron overload, hemochromatosis, is a hereditary disorder in which we do not excrete iron. And it seems to be more common in people of Irish descent. And those women will have a very high ferritin. Say, like if you have adequate iron stores, your ferritin should be 35, 50, maybe 70. Wouldn't like it to be much more than 100. But if you have iron overload, your ferritin may be 200, 300 or more. And in that case, your doctor needs to look for hemochromatosis, because the iron that you do not excrete will be deposited in your organs, like your liver and your brain and so on.
And so I'm thinking about all of these different comorbidities that might impact the ferritin levels, so that you may assume, or that your healthcare practitioner may assume, that you have adequate ferritin levels when you really do have issues regarding inflammation. I think about things that we've discussed previously, like fatty liver disease.
Yes, fatty liver disease creates inflammation, and then your ferritin may be elevated because of that. And that's why the first time you measure ferritin, you should also get an iron. And if the iron is low, the serum iron is low, then and the ferritin is high, then the ferritin is probably elevated due to inflammation.
How serious is this condition, this iron deficiency without anemia. Is this something that women and men, but we're speaking primarily to women, is this something that we should be concerned about?
I think we should really be concerned about it because I think that we underestimate it as a cause of fatigue, and as a cause of mood disorders. And then fatigue is hard. Is it because you're depressed? Is it because you work too much? Is it because you work at work and then you come home and take care of the family, and you or you're a bad sleeper and you don't get 7 to 9 hours a night? It's so hard to sort out mood, fatigue, and the amount of work and commuting that people do. But I think we have greatly underestimated the effect of iron deficiency without anemia.
You know, it's very interesting. We recently have seen an uptick in the information on perimenopause and menopause, which I'm very grateful for because we do focus on different ways in which to address some of the perimenopausal and menopausal symptoms. And as I was going through this presentation with you, it occurred to me that we seem to want to do a lot of intervention with other forms of therapy. Could be natural forms, it could be hormone replacement therapy, a prescription form. But is it conceivable that perhaps this is overlooked and we have over-medicated or perhaps under-medicated the population? I mean, I'm thinking again, I'm thinking about rushing to write a prescription when we should be doing some of the diagnostic work first.
Exactly. So lots of people are fatigued, and I think it's essential to measure the ferritin levels to evaluate your iron storage before you jump to conclusions that it is depression or that you need hormones or that you're probably hypothyroid. Yeah. So if I was the president, everybody would get their ferritin and iron levels checked at least once.
Thank God that, you know, you said that because I'm going to vote for you.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Because we
I'm
definitely
going
want to
to
change.
reward you.
Because we definitely, yes, I know, because I'm loyal. So this
Yes,
is.
you can be an ambassador.
Thank you.
You're
And I
welcome.
want to make sure that I'm an ambassador to Italy.
For sure.
Send me somewhere nice.
Yes.
But all kidding aside, what are the three things that you want our listeners to remember from the wisdom that you shared?
Well, I would like you to remember that you can have iron deficiency even if you are not anemic. And I would like you to get your ferritin and iron checked at least once. Number two, if you have been prescribed iron, because you've been told you were iron deficient with or without anemia, I would like you to take iron bisglycinate, and I would like you to take it Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and don't take it every day. And of course, I'd like you to discuss switching iron, with your doctor and, not just some doctor you heard online. And then the third thing is that what is the third thing? I don't know if I have a third thing. Those are the two main things.
Maybe special conditions. So if you're a woman who has one of the things that we talked about, one of the conditions or comorbidities that we discussed, whether it's you've been diagnosed with fatty liver disease or you've had bariatric surgery, or perhaps you have extensively used some of the products that we discussed earlier, especially to address gastric symptoms that perhaps don't accept the first opinion. If you're told that your ferritin levels are high, make sure that the healthcare practitioner that you're seeing understands that these might be falsely elevating your ferritin levels. So you want to make certain that you've disclosed all of that.
That's a great point. We have so much overweight, so much fatty liver. So how could we not have all this inflammation and all these high ferritins? In which case, we would miss iron deficiency with anemia. So that's a great point. And one more thing is, if you're on an acid blocker, please discuss with your doctor whether you need to stay on this. I really worry about not just not absorbing iron, but many other nutrients as well.
And last, I guess the last thing is we talk about diet. And when we talk about diet, because you've chosen to be a vegan, there are some great things. I mean, obviously I've been swearing off red meat after our last podcast where we talked about where that red meat resides. I wasn't a great red meat eater, although I ate liver as a kid. But I stopped eating red meat. And now I look at other ways in which to absorb iron from some of the foods. You don't have to give up what you're eating today. If you're a vegetarian or a strict vegan, you just need to find other ways in which to get that into your diet, or perhaps you do need supplementation if it's determined that you may be iron deficient without anemia. So we don't want you to have to give up what you love, and we don't want you to engage in bad habits.
Yes. And don't forget beans. Our grandparents ate beans. Our great grandparents ate beans from many different cultures. And that's because they contain so many important amino acids to build protein, and they contain iron. And we don't eat them enough in this country.
Good to know. Just make sure that you put a lot of air freshener in your office or in your car or in your home. Well, beans, they're very good for your heart.
Yes.
You know what that, the old phrase,
That's
right?
right.
Thank you, Catherine. It's always wonderful to have the opportunity to have your wisdom shared with me and our guests on the Love Mia Vita podcast.
Thank you,
And until
Jerry.
next time, we want you to be well. And to all of our listeners, please love Mia Vita. Thank you for joining us on the Love Mia Vita podcast. Love Mia Vita means love my life, and that is a mantra we should all live by. Please like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and check out our website at fempharma.com. Remember to live well and love Mia Vita.